about the home in this county, because I'm speaking on it by request. I have not felt that I have been a master at saying just the right thing on the home subject, but I can say that I've tried a lot of times and have spoken so often in this county on this subject, one place or another. But there's always that younger group that's coming on, and no matter how old we are, we still need to think about those same principles of righteousness that should regulate our lives at home. Still talk about the church. That's another theme, of course, that we discuss year in and year out, over and over again in a lifetime of preaching. But it's been a good audience each service. I delight in the morning services. We've had several, and it includes all ages. I've been especially happy to have teenagers and younger people than that in our midst in the mornings as well as at night. Limestone County is a good place to be. The church is not growing as rapidly as it used to, but it has come to have good song leaders such as Freddie tonight and James last night, and good leaders each service. I don't know how many good leaders there are in this county, but it would be an amazing number. Song leaders were very scarce 48 years ago in this county. There just weren't many. There's been a change in the right direction in that regard and in many other ways. I don't want us to get satisfied and rest on our laurels, as it were. Let's press on. I challenge the new generation to build from here a very effective influence for the glory of God. Last night we were trying to talk to those who maybe have not married and to try to give advice that maybe could help. Tonight I'm talking about our problems, those of us who are married, and the effort that we should make to try to make our homes better. There's such a thing as successful marriages, if that's a good expression. Homes are not as good as we could dream about. We can aim higher than we actually reach, and we never reach the limit. There's always room for improvement. I'm sure that's true at your house and my house. And that's a challenge before us, to try to make the home better. And it's worth the effort. If one of us becomes a little better homemaker, fulfills his responsibility with a better disposition, in a better way, he makes that home better. And if he does, that's his home. He makes his own life better. Whatever effort he makes in behalf of the betterment of the home is for his own joy. He's rewarded because he's right in the middle of that home and is part of it. And if it improves by his effort or anybody's effort, then it's a happy improvement as far as any individual member of the family is concerned. Try to make your home better. Isn't there something you could do maybe that would make your home a little better? Surely every person who is married should be very careful and discreet and not leave any room for the companion to doubt our faithfulness and our loyalty. These years that have been recently with us certainly have taken women over here and men over there and working with various people through the day. I began coming into this county when cotton was king and people chopped cotton and picked cotton and plowed and worked hard on the farm. And then in the war years, things began to open up in the way of industry at Huntsville and Decatur and Roundabout and now at Athens too. And the people who live in the country are not farmers now, generally. the change in that regard, the change in the economy has been very, very great. And from the day when the husband and wife and children all worked together in the field, chopping cotton, picking cotton, working together as a family unit, now mother works over yonder and father works somewhere else, and the children are here and there working or playing, and it's a different world. And with the changes, many of which we certainly appreciate, there have come added dangers. If a man is working at a machine next to somebody else's wife, maybe still another wife on the other side, and day in and day out they are there together, in carpools, they ride together, there are dangers when there's less association with family members and more association with those of other families. I think we need to be aware of danger. I couldn't tell you how many doctors have divorced their wives and married their nurses. I couldn't tell you how many businessmen have divorced their wives and married their secretaries. I don't know how many people have divorced their wives and married someone with whom they work in the business or factory or wherever. But I do know there is that danger. And being aware of the danger is some protection. If we are aware of the danger, there's less danger. I've told this a lot of times. I heard it first a long time ago. A man worked beside a circle saw that was spinning at such enormous speed. And, of course, one awkward lick to cause him to fall into that would mean the last of him, or at least a very serious injury. And somebody said, "Aren't you afraid to work here with that saw?" He said, "I certainly am. And if I were not, it'd be dangerous." I think if a man has a workplace such as I mentioned there, if he's very much aware this is dangerous, then he takes added precaution and there's less danger. If the doctor and nurse who work together every day, hopefully in pleasant relationship, if they're aware of the danger, there's less danger. If they can be discreet and very careful and not make one move that's out of place, a vulgar, dirty joke is not funny. I don't know what the advantage is in blasphemy. America has gotten very coarse and crude and rude in its speech, even on television and radio. They let the law down some few just recently, comparatively recently, and they have no law against it, and so today they're just nothing too dirty to say. And those of you who are with the public in your work through the week, you know that speech is one way in which America is sick. Vulgarity, speech that is suggestive, lascivious, it's serious. And a person who is trying to have a good home will not entertain himself and others with vulgarity. I was preaching at a place some years ago and made a talk on the tongue and its the serious use of it. The very many things that the tongue, which is a little member, can do that are evil, as well as things that are great, that are good. The tongue is a little member, but it boasteth great things. But after I'd made my talk dealing especially with the negative, I went back by a door, an outside door, and several came by on their way out to the cars. And one man said, "I work over here." He told me where. He said there about 12 of us work there in one particular unit. And he said the man with the dirtiest mouth in that 12 was sitting here today where he attends regularly. I wish I could say with full confidence that there's one thing about my brethren, you'll never hear anything vulgar or dirty. I learned later that an elder of that very church where I was at the time worked in an office where people that worked under him came and went, and he entertained them with vulgar jokes, so-called jokes. I didn't know it because he seemed like such a gracious, honorable man, so pleasant when I visited in his home and he visited in mine. And I had already been there and gone before I learned of his dirty mouth through the week. If there's somebody here tonight with a mind that is filthy enough to pour forth filth from the mouth, I'm talking to that very one, and I think that's cheap and inexcusable and serious and dangerous. Let's be careful about our lives, which means be careful about our deeds and our words. It's out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. And if a man's speech is dirty, his mouth is dirty. If he speaks without reverence for God, it's because there's not reverence on the inside. I went in a place to eat, my wife and I, and Alabama was busy playing football last fall, and it was coming in on television. And this eat place had an extra room that sometimes groups could get together and close it off and be a separate room. But they had it open then, and there weren't many people down there, and the television was on down there, and I enjoyed watching the game. And my wife and I went down where we could see and hear and eat. The lady that I understand was owner of the place was sitting back there by the television and delighting in the game. And every time there was a very significant play, either one that pleased her or one that displeased her, she shouted out the name of God. Just one word. The name of God. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. God will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. I don't know who the woman is. I don't know her record generally. I just was eating there that day, and I heard her blaspheme the name of God, take his name with such irreverence, every little bit. I wouldn't be surprised at hearing of most any unholy thing about her life. I've said a long, long time that when there's irreverence on the inside, there's rottenness at the core. And if a man can tell his dirty joke and laugh heartily, and on some other occasion take God's name in vain, you can't trust him in the dark. And I believe his wife may have room to question his loyalty to her. Don't need to be surprised if a man who has irreverence is disloyal. I've said that when there's irreverence, other bad things just kind of can fall in line. One of the happiest experiences in my life has been association with young people. That association in class was primarily when I was actually young also. It doesn't seem reasonable when I say that it was 29 years ago since I last taught. It doesn't seem to me like it is all that long. But it's been a good while since I taught boys and girls in school. But I learned in our little worship assemblies, if they could play during prayer or the singing of a hymn or the reading of the Bible, the one who would do that might lie to you if it came in handy. You need not be surprised at much of anything. for a man who's vulgar in speech. You remember in Matthew 12, he tells us it's out of the abundance of the heart that a man speaks. And he also tells us, by thy word shall thou be justified, and by thy word shall thou be condemned. That passage is not telling us that the only thing that'll be brought to judgment will be our words. But that's one way we can stand condemned before God. Clean speech is a good thing. Let there be more than clean speech. Let there be the right kind of thinking that manifests itself in the right kind of behavior as well as the right kind of speech. That in this day when men work with other wives and women work with other husbands through the day, and it's day in and day out, there needs to be very special care and discretion and good judgment, and not one step down in the wrong direction toward ultimate failure of the principles of righteousness on which a good home can be based. You be aware of danger, and therefore do not invite it. Have a good name that's rather to be chosen than great riches, and that'll stand you in good in making a better home. No man has to be ashamed of clean speech, and no woman has to be ashamed of clean speech and good behavior, but a lot of people need to be ashamed of their record. I was hearing just recently of a man, supposedly a member of the church, whose conduct on the job is ugly, disgraceful. And if his wife knew what he does, knows what he does on the job, I'm sure she lost confidence and her heart would be broken. People know that behavior out here in the crowd. The Lord knows it also. And ultimately it gets through to the situation where the home is broken. In the home, the taking of responsibility is one of the things. Somebody ought to do this job and that job, and there's a sort of division of our responsibilities and labors. As things are all mixed up now, as the checks are coming from two sources and the homework is divided, but anyway, somebody has the responsibility for this and that. Do you take your part of the load at home? Are you somehow aware that work is being done and things are going on that do not go on without some push and help? A lot of homes break because of money. People, in a few cases, this also comes into the church on occasions. There are a few church members that don't like to work. I was talking and making the point as effectively as I could several years ago in Lauderdale County about if a man will not work, neither let him eat. And we are to study to be quiet and to watch after our own business, work with our own hands, that we may live honestly, may pay our debts, in other words, and provide for ourselves, have lack of nothing. 1 Thessalonians 4:11, 2 Thessalonians 3:10. And the man got up and walked out. And somebody asked him why he left, and he said, well, some of those women have been talking to that preacher. I was a stranger there, and I didn't know I was stepping on his toes at all, because I didn't even know his name. I didn't know the man. But he thought, when I got through talking about a man that will not work, neither let him eat, that I was talking about him. And it made him mad. It offended him. Some people will earn, but they do not spend it wisely. They do not have money to buy food and clothes and pay the utility bills. They spend their money for things of less value. I believe that's a serious mistake, and a lot of homes would be a lot happier if there were more care in regard to the way money is used. Money is not filthy lucre necessarily, but it can be. If it's ill-gotten gain, if it's obtained by unholy means, The man that did steal is to steal no more. Let him labor, working with his hand that which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. He's to be able to give, and he's to be able to take care of those within his own family, especially those at his own house. But his mother and father over yonder in some other house may need his special help in some stage in life, just as they helped him when he was helpless and little. I think a lot of the home arguments and bitterness will grow out of the money problem, the earning and the spending and all that. I will say that fornication is a home breaker and a soul destroyer. Certainly, that is the basis of many divorces. And homes are not happy in many cases because of the immorality of one member or another. Flee fornication. That's a short sentence. The first part of 1 Corinthians 6:18. Run from it. Flee from it. Maybe that's what we've been saying when we were talking about speech a little bit ago. Alcohol is another thing that can destroy a home. I've mentioned preaching at Arab. I believe that community has had more problem on alcohol and drugs than any community that I've ever known, as intimately as I know that community, that area. And some that I've come to know in that area back when I was working there 12, 13 years ago, and again now recently, that were bothered so much by alcohol in an earlier period of life, and they've let it go and sobered up, and now they're precious in the sight of God. People can get the habit and then break the habit, but it's not easy to break the habit. In looking around, talking to the relatives of the church members and acquaintances here and there, I find people that would be members of the church if they made any move of a religious nature. But I get better acquainted and learn they're slaves of alcohol. If you happen to find one that's sober and you may like his disposition, his attitude, and you think, now there's a good one, I'd sure like to have him in the church, I'd like to see if we couldn't reach him, and you keep talking and learn that he's a slave and shackled, you may learn that the man has grown son off over yonder somewhere with his stepfather and his mother. And you meet another in a similar situation with him. While you're talking and getting acquainted, you may find out he has a 13-year-old son over yonder somewhere. I don't know how many divorces have come to North Alabama where alcohol just made a wreck. And there, in general, the money earned goes to finance that habit. And when the alcohol habit comes in our day, there's so many other drugs, chemicals, that can dethrone the mind and further enslave and wreck a home. I tried to say last night, if a young man has bad habits, the young lady with high standards of conduct should not count on his promise. If he tells her, I'll quit, I'll sober up, I'll behave myself, if you'll just marry me, I can promise that young lady that if she'll marry one who has been drinking again and again in spite of his mother, in spite of what the Lord says about it, in spite of other good friends, then his promise isn't worth 15 cents, generally. If he wanted a good wife, he should have been sober and remained sober, that some worthy young woman could trust him and have confidence in him. The terrible price of evil conduct shows up especially in home life. And it'll show up at the judgment too. Neither fornicators, nor drunkards, nor thieves shall inherit the kingdom. I didn't mention all of them. I just mentioned a few to illustrate the point. 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10, it's neither nor. Not this one, not that one. You don't have to violate all the rules in the book. And if you want to make a good home, you try not to violate any rule that God has laid down. Try to make your home as wonderful as it can be. You'll never make it too good. There's no such thing as a life that's too clean and pure. There's no such thing as a home that has standards that are too high that they have set for themselves and attained and reached. A young man who has a very worthy and pure mother is blessed. If he has a father just as pure and worthy, he's blessed. Wonderfully blessed. And I am just sure that numbers of the boys and girls who are here, to the limit of their understanding of life's many situations, know they have a right and a reason to be very thankful to have the parents they do. Sons and daughter, if you have such parents that you appreciate and they have given you an example of what a good home is, tell your parents you appreciate it. It'll do them good. It'll do them much good. I told someone this morning that when I was a timid beginner, a word of encouragement meant a lot to me, but I don't reckon it meant any more then than it does now. I'm sure in homes, no matter how old we get, or how far along we get, or how often we've heard it before, words of appreciation for one member of the family, from another member of the family, it adds to the joy. I think as husbands and wives, we need to say better things to one another. As parents and children, we need to say better things to one another. Gratitude felt and expressed is precious. And it does something for the family. It makes it a better family. It makes a better home. It's good. The purity is essential. And the gratitude expressed is wonderful. And we're trying to make better homes. These are things of which better homes are made. The good woman of Proverbs 31 worked willingly with her hands. She reached forth her hands to the needy, and her children would rise up and call her blessed. She opened her mouth with wisdom. That was the law of kindness in her tongue. We don't give one another reason to doubt us if we are trying hard to have a good home. But we should give reason to consider that we are part of the team and want to take our part of the load and to express our joy and our gratitude for the good things that are done in our behalf. If people are trying to make the home the best they know how, they need to read the Bible together and pray together and attend worship together. The influences of this good book are very wholesome, holy influences that come from worship, devotion to God. They do something for the home as well as do something for that relationship with God. God is a spirit, and he wants us to worship in spirit and in truth. He seeketh such to worship him. But in worshiping God and doing his will and following his law of righteousness, we improve the quality of home life and make it a better place for the children, make it a better place for the mother and father. Wouldn't it be good if I could say the right thing about how to improve our homes? We don't want to give room for the companion to doubt us. We don't want to accuse foolishly. There have been times when a wife would think her husband unfaithful, or the man would think his wife unfaithful when it's not true. And others know it isn't true because they know the record of the one accused. Let's be careful about accusing when there's no basis. That can lead toward the wrecking of the home, even as when there is really the unworthiness. kindness, thoughtfulness, gratitude expressed, there's no way to tell how much such things can be worth. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a network of silver. The wise man said that. He wasn't talking just about home life, but wherever those words are fitly spoken, they are precious. They're like apples of gold in a network of silver. That tongue, which is the little member, can boast great things. It can do a lot. It can do a lot to discourage. In our desire to do things with children, there come questions as to what we should do to try to help them and let them know that we love them. Organized play is common in our day and may be in many cases very fortunate. Children played down on the vacant lot many decades ago, just the few that happened to live there close, and they had their own games that maybe in some cases they made up themselves. But anyway, that was play. Children are going to play if you just give them a little room and a chance. But in our day we have organized play. I'm sure that a thing that may in many cases be good, and a father may do much for his son in being with him in his hours of play, but it must not become the tail that wags the dog. The play must not reach the point that it crowds out any time to talk, for father and son to talk, mother and daughter to talk. If the children are at school and at play, and at school and at play, and at school and at play, and are not even around with the family, there's something lacking. Talking with one another is one way the tie can be made closer. And if something breaks in and cuts out that talk, that's unfortunate. A better home is a home where there are better parents and better children, and where there's a wonderful relationship all the way around between husband and wife, parents and children, father and son, mother and daughter. That communication, that intimate association. The church of our Lord needs to be a very, very close-knit people where we know each other and like each other and enjoy being together and are together. Not just to eat and drink and laugh, but together to talk and encourage and instruct and discuss. It's hard to do anything better for a youngster than talk to him, if he's yours, or if he's somebody else's youngster. If he can be a good friend, that's wonderful. Some of us haven't done our job that way with our children or with our grandchildren. We didn't have enough time. We didn't spend enough time, or not now spending enough time. We need to talk and know each other. And if a man would talk to his 17-year-old, he needs to talk with him while he's 7 years old. There are times that parents would say, oh, it's difficult for us to communicate with our teenage son or daughter. There seems to be a wall between us. Well, maybe there could be something done when the little ones are playing around to be sure there's no wall that's built up, so that the open line of communication is open indeed, and there can be that hearty discussion of whatever's on their heart and mind. You want to talk about a good home and a successful home, successful marriage and successful family, then it's one where there is that happy communication. Sandra, my baby girl, is not here, so I can talk about her tonight a little while. When Ryan was born, he was a bit oversized from the start and loud and noisy in his talk. And as he went through elementary school, it was difficult for her to actually enjoy him. That's the truth, and I'm sure Sandra wouldn't really object to my saying it. But now that he's 6 feet and old enough to talk with adults, he talks with his mother and he talks with his daddy, and he likes to come home and talk with his own mother and father, and they are so delighted in him. What better thing could I say than that now they can talk, and he wants their advice, and he likes to ask questions, and they like to talk to him, and it's pleasant all the way around? That's a happy situation. If you're having trouble talking at your house, see what you can do about it. If you're the young person and you feel like you have trouble talking to your parents, see if you can't get that wall down somehow. Saying thank you for the good things they do for you would help a lot. And you being willing to listen would help a lot. I don't know what to say to get it done, but I do know that in the happiest of families, there's the most wonderful freedom to communicate and to discuss things together. It's a good thing. It's worth cultivating. The Lord intended that there be one generation helping, lending a hand to the next generation as it comes on to adult problems. Talk together, share, live unselfishly. Selfishness is one of the ugliest things we can have. Oh, this vulgarity I talked about and the indecent thinking and indecent talking, that's ugly. Indeed, it's serious. But selfishness is serious. When we want and want, and that's what we have in mind when we're with others, maybe children want, give me this, give me that. The young man, the younger son, said to his father in the story of the prodigal son, give me the portion of substance that falleth to me. His message to his father could be briefly summarized in the words, give me, give me. And when he got his portion, he left home, went into a far country. It didn't say he went east or west or north or south. I suppose it didn't matter the direction. He went into a far country, got out where his father would not be there to know if he came in 3 o'clock in the morning after having been drinking. He got away from all restraint and from anybody that cared or would try to restrain him. He went into a far country and there wasted his substance in riotous living. When he'd spent it all, he had nothing to show for it. When there's selfishness in the part of the son or daughter, it makes a scar. If there's selfishness on the part of the father or the mother, there's a scar. And selfishness is not a good thing in any of us. A willingness to share and to, as Paul said, to spend and be spent. He was going to Corinth for a third time, and he never had in the past taken support from that church, and he's telling them in his letter that he wouldn't that time either. And he suggested the way he felt about it is the parents lay up for the children, not the children for the parents, and he felt evidently like he had been a sort of father to them, and he was going to continue that. And he was wasn't seeking their money. He was seeking them and to try to help them. And he was willing to spend and be spent in their behalf. Now, the world could use a lot more unselfish people and people who are pure and thoughtful and discreet. Immodesty can open the door to a breakdown of confidence. With immodesty and vulgarity, temptations come and homes are destroyed. It amazes me. And I've tried to wonder, I've thought about it again and again, and I've said, am I that far wrong? Is there no danger? You go to a supermarket today and the way people dress and come in, it looks to me like there's no sign of discretion and modesty. Instead of running from fornication, the attire seems to suggest, it does to me, that there may be vulgar thoughts and behavior. I think that when America puts clothes back on, it'll be a time when there'll be fewer divorces. If we're waiting for the time for fewer divorces, it'll be when talk is cleaner and people dress more decently and more modestly. I've rambled around, touching maybe some points of value. I hope something good was done. I have a wonderful opportunity here, and I'd like to measure up to that opportunity. I want to help. I want to help all of us have better homes. And all of us need to try to make better homes of our own. It'll be a better home at your house if there's you or some other member of the family needs to obey the gospel and does. It's an occasion of rejoicing. It's a wonderful thing when a father obeys the gospel. A young man was baptized and the little sleeping baby didn't know what was going on, of course, in the mother's arm. And the next Sunday the mother was baptized. And again the little one was asleep and didn't know what was going on. But I thought, what a wonderful thing is happening to that little one. Mother and father coming into the church before the little one will be able to remember. Later, the little one can say, I don't remember when they obeyed the gospel. But it's a couple that have been attending regularly. They did a good while before they were baptized, and now they're attending. They have a long way to go to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might, but they're headed in that direction. Isn't that wonderful? For the future of that family, if they'll just go ahead in that direction. The church of the Lord is important. The family is important. Those are two special institutions. Try to serve well as a member of the body and as a member of the family. If you need to obey the gospel and make your beginning as a Christian, come while we stand together and sing.